You are listening to The Nature of Things on WRVO. This essay originally aired on March 26, 1993.
I ventured forth the day following the blizzard of 93 to assess its effect on Baltimore Valley. It was hard work. My snowshoes were sinking well over 6 inches into the still fresh snow. As I set out across the backyard wildlife area, I flushed a small group of juncos, working over those weeds, mostly sweet clover, which protruded above the snow. Passing an isolated white pine, I flushed a single robin, which protested the intrusion, as robins are wont to do. As I walked, I measured the snow depths, trying to find an average of snow banks and level spots. The results were surprising. There was less than 18 inches of new snow in the level sections, and the deepest drift I could find was just over 36 inches, 6 inches of which was old snow. I noted signs of rabbits, deer, and mice along the way, but left the follow-up on them until after I had explored the valley. The descent into the valley was difficult because the trail was covered by a great sloping drift, not really deep, about 2 feet of new snow, but sloping directly into the spring brook. I slogged on down, however, protected against slipping into the brook by the deep bite the snowshoes were taking on each step. In the valley, at last, I really began to look around. Before I allowed myself to become distracted by the tracks which crisscrossed the valley floor, I focused my attention on the snow. Surprisingly, the snow depths measured in this quiet, protected valley were quite comparable to what I had measured in the wind-swept upper levels. Maximum depth, 42 inches, including 8 inches of accumulated snow. Average depth, 18 to 24 inches. This accounted, I believe, for the surprising amount of deer sign. Deer will slog through a 42-inch drift on occasion, but prefer to stay put when it is that deep all over. I recall in the winter of 1958-59 at Oswego, when the snow was a uniform 3 feet deep, the deer showed great reluctance to move, and I encountered groups of them in my wanderings on snowshoes. I studied the surface of the new fallen snow, which I've said before is a canvas decorated by the fallout from recent happenings. Although it was deathly quiet during my snow study, I could still get some sense of what had transpired. Principal food sources for the birds and the tree squirrels appear to have been hemlock and yellow birch. The surface of the snow was peppered with the goosefoot scales from yellow birch catkins, including numbers of partly plucked catkins and a few of the winged seeds. I looked in vain for birch bud scales. Grouse and some other birds are good budders, but I didn't find any. Hemlock cone scales and winged seeds were also evident, and as I have often seen in such situations, tufts and bits of moss and lichens. My surmise there is that chickadees and woodpeckers had dislodged them from the bark of maple, beech, and ash in search of egg masses or hibernating insects underneath. I noted next tracks of gray squirrel, red squirrel, chipmunk, and white-footed mouse. Even in deep snow, there are infinite small redoubts for mice where hemlock boughs, loose bark, or fallen branches shape the snow into roofs and siding. Following the trail to an elevated entrance, I was surprised to find a little snow cave of at least 6 by 8 inches. This snug room was not occupied at the time I broke in. In fact, a burrow led out of the back to who knows how many other little snug havens. Of most interest to me were the activities of the deer, because I knew the snow was approaching the maximum for their navigation. The tracker has to be careful about deer trails in deep snow. Deer are quite expert at following the lead of the trail breaker, even matching footprints. And what appears at first glance to represent a single deer may branch into two or three along the way. You can't really gauge the deer population based on the network of trails alone. I decided to search for deer beds, and following the tracks, were able to locate nearly a dozen forms, all close to the stream, under the shielding boughs of the hemlock. As I was examining one little cluster, 4 deer blundered into view, apparently not anticipating my presence. It was surprising to contrast their plodding course before they detected my presence with a graceful and apparently unencumbered exit. But I know deer, and I know that the moment they felt free from apparent danger, they return to plodding and slogging. Energy reserves and speed spell salvation for deer, and they don't waste either. Well, here we are, stranded in the depths of the hemlock grove beside Baltimore Brook, and the wind is freshening, causing some wild gesticulations in the hardwoods at the crest of the valley. We'll have to wait until next week to work our way out of here. Now, that's all I have for this week. This is John Weeks saying thanks for listening. Tune in next week, and keep it natural.